This is another Knights of the Precious Blood podcast.
This talk is titled Fortitude in Theory and is presented by Father Richard Wallace.
All right, everyone, I'm glad to be here teaching you about fortitude today. Now, we're going to go into a really analytical examination of fortitude because I like to be analytical. In the fraternity of St. Peter, we study the philosophy of St. Thomas Aquinas, who's known as the prince of the theologians and philosophers. Like, this is, the church recommends that we study St. Thomas Aquinas above every other theologian because of the impact he's had and the way that he expresses his thoughts. So we're going to talk about fortitude today, and we're going to really follow what St. Thomas says on the subject. I'm going to try to give a lot of examples, a lot of illustrations to make it concrete. So first of all, fortitude. The theme of this whole retreat is courage in the storm. Yeah, that's the title of it. So courage literally just means fortitude. They're the exact same thing. So if I say fortitude, if I say courage, you could feel free to change them around because they're the exact same thing. We often talk about courage and say, let's have courage, let's be strong, let's be brave. And we know what that means in a very general sort of way, usually by experience and by things we've seen. But it's good to follow the way of St. Thomas and to actually pull this virtue apart and see what's in it, what it involves, what it implies, the different divisions of fortitude, things like that. So it'll give you a lot of matter for meditation and a lot of questions probably. So let's start then on the theory and practice of fortitude. Let's read a letter from all the saints in heaven first, written to you especially. It says, "Dear Christian soul, fortitude is a necessary virtue to make it through the warfare of this life and to attain salvation. No battle is as fearful, full of dangers, snares, dark days and illusions, as the battle against our threefold enemy, the world, the flesh, and the devil. We know." Signed, the blessed in heaven. All the saints have been through this. They've had to train themselves in fortitude. Now they're going to give us a lesson today. So, first of all, what is fortitude? Here's a definition that we're going to spend the whole class picking apart. Fortitude is the moral virtue which moderates fear and daring in us. That's really what it is. I know it sounds super abstract, but that's the essence of fortitude. It moderates, it's a moral virtue, and it moderates fear and daring. What is daring? We know what fear is, but what is daring? Daring is the opposite of fear. It's that drive in us which makes us say, let's do this, let's attack, you know, let's take the reins here. So it moderates that. We're going to see how it moderates that as well. Let's pick this apart then. So, first of all, fortitude is the moral virtue which moderates fear and daring in us. What is a moral virtue? Well, the moral virtues are different from the theological virtues. You know, there's faith, hope, and charity. Those are called theological virtues. Then you have the intellectual virtues. Then you have the moral virtues. They're all different, and they have different functions. The theological virtues concern God directly. The intellectual virtues concern, they concern wisdom and speculative matters. The moral virtues, though, concern the road to getting to God. So I came up with a little illustration for you. In a battle, everything a soldier does is directed towards the love of his country. Everything he does in the battle, whether it's eating or fighting or building something or helping someone, It's all directed to the love of his country, which holds the primary place in his heart. But the weapons and tools that he uses will determine his success and victory in winning for his country. And so, everything a Christian does in life is ideally directed towards God, who holds the primary place in his heart, just like a country holds a primary place in your heart. That's like faith, hope, and charity. But the moral virtues are like your arsenal, the arsenal by which the soldier advances in this or that thing, the daily tools to get through the battle. That's what the moral virtues are. Now, the moral virtues are divided into four main categories, and these are called the cardinal virtues. Cardinal. They're called cardinal because the word cardinus in Latin means a hinge. So it basically means they are the hinge of many other virtues. Many other virtues hang on these four. The cardinal virtues. So first of all, we have prudence. That's the virtue by which we make good decisions with our reason. We say, using right reason in practical matters. And then we have justice, the virtue by which we give God and neighbor their due. Then we have fortitude, the virtue which moderates our fear and daring. That's the one we're talking about. And then we have temperance, the virtue which moderates our desire for sense pleasures. I have this really nice picture here because I like to use art in my presentations. This is from the 15th century, and it's an illustration of the virtues personified. So on the far left, we have prudence. It says prudenza. So you have this lady holding a snake, and she has a mirror in her hand. Why is that? Why is she holding a snake in a mirror? Well, what did our Lord say about snakes? He said, be as simple as a dove and as cunning as a serpent, which is used to express prudence. Sometimes to be prudent, you have to be super, super smart. And she has a mirror in her hand. Why? Because prudence often requires that we examine ourselves really closely, our intentions, our motives, the past, experience, and things like that. And then justice, justitia, it says, is holding a sword and in the other hand, scales. Now, I don't really know why she's holding a sword. If anyone can tell me, I'll be happy to add it to my collection of random facts. But she's holding a scale because justice concerns the law and fairness and equity and dealing out to people what is their due, and that's implied by scales. Let's skip faith, hope, and charity for now. Fortitude, I love fortitude. So it's a lady holding a pillar in one hand and a shield in the other hand. And there's like some sort of helmet or hat on her head. It's like she works at a construction site or something, wearing a hard hat. So the shield obviously represents endurance. And so does really the pillar too. They represent the power of fortitude to endure suffering. We're going to see that in a moment. We're going to talk about endurance. And then temperance. You have a lady pouring a vessel of water into another one. But she's doing it like over her back, it seems. Again, if anyone can tell me what that means, feel free, because I don't really know. That's an interesting personification. In the middle, we have faith, hope, and charity. Faith has the chalice and the cross. Hope is basically just praying. And charity has a fire in her hand. So let's not spend too much time on that, but that's the moral virtues and the theological virtues. Now, let us remember, I always want you to remember this, that the moral virtues must flow from charity. Because without charity, there is no true virtue. It sounds really harsh to say that, but it's true. If someone does not have charity, that basically means if one is not in God's grace, technically speaking, he does not have true virtue. Because true virtue always implies that God is your goal and that you're going to God more than anything else. But when someone commits a mortal sin, he breaks that. And he says, I'm no longer going to God. I'm going the opposite way. So therefore, he can't be said to have true virtue in the strict sense. He can still do virtuous things. He doesn't just all of a sudden become like a bum who loses all of his power to do virtuous things. But technically speaking, you cannot have true virtue without charity in your soul. I put a picture here of a mountain and a stream. So the mountain are like faith, hope, and charity because they rise up to heaven. God's in heaven. But the moral virtues are like streams, like four streams, which flow downwards from this holy mountain. So they have to come from faith, hope, and charity. If there's no mountain, there's not going to be a stream. There has to be the incline for the water to come down. Now, this is a super important thing I always want you to remember. I'm basically going to say that about every single slide I tell you today. But this is a really important one. The golden mean. This is how moral virtues work. The golden mean. It is important to know that moral virtue observes the golden mean. And that means that any true moral virtue will be somewhere in between two extremes, which are either a defect or an excess of that virtue. If you go too much to either side, that virtue is no longer a virtue, but a vice. It's like cooking a steak, you know, you gotta get like 210 degrees. Go a little too less and the steak is bad. It's rare, because no one wants to eat rare steak, right? Like to have it well done. Perhaps I'm alone in that opinion, though. And if you cook it too much, then it's way too burnt. It's like black. So you have to avoid the excess and the defect in cooking a steak, 200 degrees or whatever. So we have some examples here. Prudence, that's the golden mean. That's the virtue. Now, if one didn't have enough prudence, then they have imprudence. That's a vice. So basically means the person does not think enough about what they should do. They are imprudent. You know, people that just say things that come out of their mouth, and you say, calm down, you're being really imprudent with what you're saying. Think about what you're going to say before you say it. That's a vice. It's not prudence. It's a defect. But someone could have too much prudence, in which case it's not even prudence. It's called over-solicitude. Over-solicitude is basically when someone is prudent about things that either don't matter or are sinful. So for example, there are people that are really prudent about ripping people off. You know, they'll get all the money out of you and they're super smart about doing it. They can be called prudent, but they're not really prudent. They're over-solicitous. Or again, worrying about worldly matters. So you're super prudent to make sure that everyone at church knows and loves you. You have to be seen and loved by everyone. So you spend all this time, you know, getting dressed up super nice, making sure your car looks super nice, saying the best things about yourself. You're prudent, but in a matter that's useless. So therefore, it's not prudence. It's over-solicitude. Another example is religion, because religion is a moral virtue. The correct way to do religion is to worship the true God. Okay, so if someone goes to the defect of that, what do they have? They fall into irreligion. Basically means atheism, agnosticism, things like that. So they don't have enough of God in their life. Now here's an interesting one. What is the excess of religion? Because can you worship God too much? No, that's not possible actually. You can't worship God too much. But this is the excess of religion, superstition. That basically means you're not you're worshiping things that aren't God. So you're giving divine power to things that aren't God. Palm reading, tarot cards, all those really ridiculous things that people do to tell their future, they're falling into a vice of excess of religion because they're giving divine power to things that don't have it. So in reality, they're not practicing religion at all. It's a vice called superstition. So that's the golden mean. We're going to talk about that a lot in the next few slides. Oh, further, I have to just give this little proviso right here. This is, I can't say much about this now, but the golden mean is a relative, which means it's not necessarily in the middle. It's not necessarily 50% right in the middle. It can be to the right or to the left, depending on who someone is and what the circumstances are. So it's a relative mean, not an absolute mean. Okay, let's check out the next slide. So the concept of the golden mean is very important, especially in fortitude. So we have right in the middle, fortitude. That's the right amount of fear. Okay, if someone didn't have had the defect of fortitude, they fall into a vice of cowardice. They're a coward. That means they have too much fear where they should not have fear. But what about the opposite? Recklessness, that's the excess of fortitude. It's when someone doesn't have enough fear. They should have fear, but they don't. So we must make this super important point. Fortitude or courage is not about having no fear. That's wrong to say. Fortitude is about having the right amount of fear in the situation that you're in. Sometimes that should be a little fear. Sometimes it should be a lot of fear. Because fear is a good thing that helps us on the road to God, as long as we put it in its due measure. So, recklessness, for example. So notice how this can slyly disguise itself as fortitude. Cowardice doesn't really disguise itself as fortitude. You could see that person's a coward. But it's very easy to think that someone who's reckless is actually courageous when they're not. Primary example, who's heard of the stuntman, Evel Knievel? Now, I see your hands back there. Evel Knievel. Is he a courageous man? He's not a courageous man, or he wasn't a courageous man. He was a reckless man, simple as that. I know it's very easy to think, well, he was so brave because he jumped over 50 cars and did all these things. Wait, but he didn't need to do any of that in the first place. He was being reckless. So you see how that can disguise itself as heroic when in reality it's simply a vice. We have to often look at our own lives so that we don't fall into the same thing. Now, let's check out the next slide. Here's a story of Quintus the Apostate. So in the early church, there was a story of a man named Quintus that we read about in the life of St. Polycarp about the year 180 AD. And he simply says that there was a man named Quintus who was in Antioch, and the Christians are being persecuted. So Quintus rashly decided to get himself martyred. So he went and presented himself to the Romans to get himself arrested to be martyred. But when he did that, they arrested him and they put him in front of the lions. And when he saw the lions, who were going to kill him, he was so scared that he recanted and offered incense to the Roman gods to save his life. So here's a classic example of someone who falls into the excesses of fortitude, but has no fortitude. First, he fell into the vice of recklessness. He said, I'm going to be a martyr. I'm going to put myself in, turn myself in. That's a vice, because the church teaches you should not look for martyrdom. And then he fell into the opposite vice, because when he saw the lions, he was so scared, he offered sacrifice to false gods. Poor Quintus. He seemed to be a brave man, but he was the furthest thing from it. So that's the story of Quintus the Apostate. Domine, quo vadis, Lord, where are you going? Oppositely, some people may think they are practicing fortitude, but in reality they are tending to cowardice. What does that mean? So here's an example. St. Peter, at the end of his life, he was a brave man, but he had a temptation to be a coward. It was disguised, though. There was a persecution in Rome in the year 65, begun by the Emperor Nero, and St. Peter thought it would be best to flee Rome to save his life for the Christians. So when he was walking out of Rome, he saw Jesus Christ walking into Rome carrying his cross. And Peter said, Lord, where are you going? And the Lord said, Peter, I'm going to Rome. And Peter said, why are you going there? And then the Lord said, Peter, I'm going to be crucified. And then at that moment, Peter recognized he was doing the wrong thing by leaving. So he went back into Rome, and he was martyred there. So you see how, at first, he thought that he was being brave by leaving Rome, but it was really cowardice disguised under a false prudence. And Christ himself had to come and teach him, Peter, you're being a coward. Go back into Rome and give up your life for the church. Now, because we're talking about prudence, we have to give a little side talk on prudence right now. Prudence is the driver in a chariot race. Because I'm giving you these really difficult situations where it seems like someone, he thought he was being courageous, but he wasn't. And he thought he was being cowardice, but he wasn't. Okay, so this is really confusing. How do we decide? Well, in the end, we need prudence. There is no complete discussion of the moral virtues without speaking of prudence. If we don't have prudence, it's a disaster. Prudence is the charioteer of the moral virtues. So without the driver, the horses, the three horses, justice, temperance, and fortitude, they're going to go everywhere in their own directions. They need a driver. They need someone who's capable of sensing their smallest motions, knowing what kind of horses they are, having experience, having been taught how to ride properly. This is prudence. And when people lack prudence, they can mistake vice for virtue, recklessness or cowardice for fortitude. Therefore, prudence is very, very important for us to have when we're speaking about the moral virtues. Now, I can give a whole talk on that one virtue, but we can't do it because we don't have time, so we'll just continue on. Here's a most interesting question. What is the chief act of fortitude? The chief act of fortitude. Well, the virtue of fortitude has a sort of twofold movement. It either overcomes the fear by attacking the fear, or by enduring the fear. That's the twofold movement of fortitude. Imagine in a war, what do the soldiers do? They're either attacking or defending. They are the aggressor, or they are the endurer. They endure. So this is interesting. Although the more natural thing is for us to attack, actually the chief act of fortitude is to endure, not to attack. It's to endure. Endurance is more difficult than aggression. Why is that? Well, St. Thomas Aquinas gives a few reasons. He says endurance applies that one is being attacked by a stronger person, whereas attacking implies that the one attacking is the stronger party, because usually you don't attack unless you think that you're stronger in some aspect. So endurance is more difficult than attack. Secondly, endurance implies a length of time, whereas attack implies sudden movement. Which is more difficult? To endure, because it's often easy to act on our sudden movements, whereas they're over the next minute. But to endure takes patience and a lot of time, and you have to just sit there and bear it. So in a word, being on the receiving end, enduring, is more difficult than being the one in control, attacking. That is very important, because as men, the natural thing to do is to attack, actually. Often you have this sort of drive in men that just naturally wants to get in people's face and just fight. Sometimes even for the faith, and even gets physical. But that's not how fortitude works. Fortitude is not about starting attacking people for the faith and be willing to fight them physically for the faith. It's better to endure in patience. Often that drive to attack them it comes from pride. We're going to see some proof of this right now with a story. So therefore, the greatest act of fortitude is to endure, and the greatest act of endurance is martyrdom. So therefore, the martyrdom is the greatest act of fortitude. Martyrdom is pure endurance. Martyrs don't attack people, they get attacked. And they have greater fortitude than one who attacks people. Little woman who had great fortitude. I love this picture because you have these seven nuns who were really short Europeans, and they had great fortitude because they were all martyred. They were stronger than most men whom I know. So these were seven young Franciscan sisters, all in their 30s. They left Europe for China to help evangelize the country in the late 1800s. And they knew China was a dangerous place to live. There was persecution happening there. So in 1900, after being there for just a year, they were told they had to leave because their lives were in danger. But they said, no, we're not going to leave. We're going to stay here and do our work. They were told to take off their habits to disguise themselves. And they said, no, we're not going to take off our habits. And later that year, they were martyred for refusing to renounce the faith. So the question is, what did they do to attack? Nothing. They didn't attack anyone. They endured. And these little women had such great fortitude that they became martyrs. We should follow their example in their meekness, in their gentleness, and their perseverance. This is what it means to be strong, to be like them. Now here are some considerations. We should just think about these things in the next few hours or whenever. In my life, courage must ultimately come from my relationship with God. If it doesn't come from my relationship with God, it's technically speaking not true courage. It's just natural courage. Secondly, I must combine courage with prudence, calmness, recollection, and even gentleness, or else I'll become like a wild cowboy who who does everything hastily and rashly. Don't be like that guy in the picture. It seems as if he's being courageous, but really, cowboys are just bandits that just drove everywhere and did whatever they wanted. They seem to be courageous, but they were just reckless. We have to have gentleness even in our courage. Thirdly, I must separate myself from the worldly mindset that fortitude is about dominating others in trivial matters such as money, social status, or body image. You know, there's a super common stereotype that to be a true man, you have to be buff. You have to have gains. But some of the strongest men I know are like the most flimsy of men, actually. But they have true fortitude, really great fortitude. So we should get rid of this image, this worldly image, that the ideal man, the courageous man, is one who like dominates. He's really strong, he has a lot of money, you know, he runs things well. That's not the correct idea of the courageous man. Lastly, I must remember that often, so often, I practice courage simply by enduring patiently. That's the way to do it. So if you know you're praying your rosary in front of the cathedral and then people come up to you and start harassing you, what are you gonna do? Get in their face and attack them and fight them? The best thing to do is to just be patient and calm and keep praying. That's the greater act of fortitude than saying, all right, let's get them. Let's go get them.
For more great content from the Knights of the Precious Blood, visit our website, www.kofpb.org.